I think they like you, Steve.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
We need to get Mother Nature into rehab. Waking up this morning, you're waking up to snow. Check the calendar. It's April 9th. What? We had about a half inch or so of measurable snow overnight. Crews did a nice job on the roads. It's not going to be a different commute than you would normally have on a Monday, I don't think. Is that, Mary? It's not bad out there.
Travel times are pretty high now for at this time. It's weird. But yeah, it's just wet.
Yeah.
It's not sticking, so that's good.
So start your cursing early as you walk outside and wonder what's going on. It could be 70 by Friday. We'll get to the top six at six. Got to start a little heavy this morning for obvious reasons of a weekend of several disturbing stories. At the top of the list is what happened in Syria, another chemical attack. Michael O'Hanlon, senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and one of the great resources we're lucky to have on this show. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. Nice to be with you today.
Appreciate you doing this so early as well. What do we know about this attack, and is it more serious than others we've seen? Not that there needs to be a scorecard.
Right. Well, what we know is not from any direct American on-the-ground monitoring, because we don't have American personnel in that part of Syria. As you know, our special forces and intelligence folks are more out east and maybe in some other places, but not that close to Damascus, as far as I understand things. So what we're seeing is reports from hospitals of people coming in with breathing problems or signs of chemical attack or dead, you know, in some cases, from such symptoms. And so that's pretty compelling, especially when you know that by some estimates, there have been up to 300 chemical attacks previously in this war. And so it's hard to believe that President Assad shows any respect for any red lines.
Does he do Assad do these on his own, or does he clear everything with Russia?
I think Russia could stop him. I don't know if he goes out and asks Russia for permission. But I think we know from Vladimir Putin's history and from the way the Russians handled insurgencies on their own territories, especially in Chechnya, that they believe in a pretty, you know, brass-knuckles approach to fighting insurgency. In other words, punish the population that might have some sympathy or might harbor any suspected insurgents. And that's essentially what Assad does, and we know that Russia essentially endorses that. And Russian aircraft have, at times, probably not with chemical weapons, but been involved in, you know, these kinds of attacks against civilian neighborhoods. At some point, it doesn't even matter that much whether it's a chemical attack or, you know, traditional ordnance. If it's being used in against an apartment building or, you know, a market or something like that, then the intent is to kill civilians, and Russia's certainly been part of that.
There was a lot of talk this weekend about how chemical weapons have been absolutely forbidden since the end of World War One, and for a war in which we've seen hospitals attacked over and over again and doctors and nurses killed. There's no standards here, right?
There aren't. But again, and I'm glad you're emphasizing the chemical part of this, it's crucial, but 98 to 99% of all the fatalities in this war have been from traditional ordnance or small arms fire or artillery, conventional weapons. And again, what's really been notable is how many of the casualties have been against innocent civilians.
Right.
And it's not just the 500,000 dead, which is more than half of the Rwanda genocide, although it's been over a slower period of time. It's been 7 years. But it's also half the country's population being pushed out of their houses and out of their neighborhoods. So about 5 million are refugees abroad. About 7 million have been pushed to one part of the country or another, not living in their homes, not sending kids to school, not able in general to hold down work. This whole generation of young Syrians is essentially being deprived of a fair start to life, which is not just a humanitarian tragedy, it also sets them up very badly for their adult lives and therefore potentially increases the risks of terrorism.
Michael, Russia's blaming Israel for the strikes on the Syrian airbase. I'm curious, Israel's response, and at this point, should the United States intervene?
Well, I think Israel knows what it's doing, and Israel has decided that it's got to intensify its role, partly because our role has been so ineffective over 7 years, and we haven't managed to prevent Iran and Hezbollah from entrenching themselves in western Syria, very close to Israel, and very close to Lebanon, where, of course, Hezbollah is based. So for those reasons, Israel feels it has to not just prevent specific attacks against Israel, but also prevent arms shipments coming through that part of the territory headed to Lebanon, and also prevent Iran and Hezbollah from setting up any kind of large bases with stockpiles of weaponry that could, over time, be sent to Hezbollah. I doubt very much that Israel can succeed in this comprehensively, because, you know, there's just too much Iranian presence in that part of Syria. But I think Israel's sending a message that if we see something big, we're going to act. And I think the United States, you know, has to essentially tolerate that. We need a much more comprehensive strategy ourselves, rather than just saying that because ISIS is temporarily, partially defeated, that we're going to come home. I think that's a big mistake.
Do you anticipate us doing anything on our own this week?
I wouldn't be surprised, although it raises the question to what end, beyond just, you know, taking away a little bit more of President Assad's Air Force. We took about almost a fifth of it out of action last year after that chemical attack, and those were in the early months of the Trump presidency. I supported that raid, partly because, you know, red lines have to mean something.
Right.
But the enforcement didn't really do anything to change the dynamics of the war, and it didn't even prevent these subsequent chemical attacks. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we take out 10% more of the Syrian Air Force, but you have to ask, what's the end game? And I think the end game here has to be a broader strategy than President Trump seems willing to consider so far. We're going to have to stay in this thing with a small U.S. presence for the long haul, because otherwise you're giving up the parts of the country that are currently occupied by our allies, and ultimately there's only a couple of potential actors who could replace them: Assad, Hezbollah, or ISIS 2.0. And I don't think we want any of those things to happen.
Talking to Michael Hanlon, Brookings Institution. We'll let you go in just a second here, but the politics of this don't matter when it comes to kids' lives and civilians' lives being killed this way, but they do matter because words matter on both sides of the globe. And there's a lot of emphasis being put on the fact that Obama failed with his red line and Trump made the whole thing worse and maybe set this up with saying we're going to pull out of Syria early. My question is, what is the upside for the Assad side to rile up the United States in this?
Well, I don't think Assad's deliberately trying to provoke us, although he's certainly having that effect. And I'm glad that you're highlighting this on your show, and I think all Americans should be thinking about it. But Assad has pretty much taken our measure and decided we don't want to get more involved. And he also wants to win the war. You know, the place where these atrocities happened is right next to the main city center of Damascus, his capital city. And he thinks there are still a number of insurgents there, and he's right about that. And he thinks that the way to defeat them is to annihilate the neighborhoods in which they live. And, of course, he's brutally and tragically wrong about that, and he's a monster for the way he's fighting this war. But he's figured out that neither President Obama nor President Trump wanted to do much, really, in the end, to stop him. Now, President Trump still has the chance to reconsider. I don't believe that it's realistic to overthrow Assad militarily. I don't think any American wants to get into another big war in the Middle East. But there are a number of things we can do in the country's more remote regions to protect our allies, to help them stabilize their own sectors where they control things, to begin to reconstruct and let refugees come home. And then over time, we got to figure out a way to coax Assad out of power, but it's going to take a while.
I really appreciate it. Thanks again for jumping on, and I'll let the news networks fight over you now.
It's nice talking with you. Have a great day.
Michael O'Hanlon, who you see all the time on CNN, MSNBC. Everybody wants him, and for good reason. He knows what he's talking about. The president deserves some congratulations for finally, after all this time, taking on Vladimir Putin by name yesterday morning in one of his tweets, and talking about how Putin is at fault for backing Assad and therefore holds responsibility for this. The question is, as we were discussing, what do we do next? We'll talk about it later on this morning with Ryan Nobles from CNN.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Don't get your kicks. With the top 6 at 6, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
Here's what you'll be talking about all day today with your friends and your neighbors and stuff. Sucky weather. But the good news is, we're going to go to meteorologist Andrea Darlis on this in just a second. The good news is it's going to get better every single day. Give me the highs again.
Oh, starting today, not very good. We're going to have snow all throughout the day and flurries an inch to 2 inches of accumulation. Today's high, 40.
Boo!
Tomorrow's high, 48.
Boo!
Wednesday's high, 60.
Hmm.
Thursday's high, 68.
Well.
And Friday's high, 70.
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm talking about. Look out, ladies. The shorts are coming out before the weekend.
Snow on Saturday.
What?
Snow on Saturday. 40 on Saturday. Snow into Saturday night.
Ooh, that's true. Then rain on Friday, even though it's 7.
Wait, hold on. We're talking about the highs. The negative 7 floor chiming in.
Just facts matter. Facts matter.
Mm-hmm. Next. Starting today, Facebook's going to notify up to 87 million people. Million people whose information, including location and liked pages, was sucked up by the political data firm Cambridge Analytica, who then in turn worked with the Trump campaign with that data. To what extent, we're not entirely clear. We also know this, that everyone on Facebook, that's about 2 billion notes have to go out. Imagine that, the tongue after you lick all those stamps. will show up in your Facebook feed a note about protecting your data and specifically how to do that. Mark Zuckerberg will testify to Congress in the next 2 days. Expect a lot of bloviating congressmen asking 45-minute questions for 10-second yes or no answers from Zuckerberg. It's more of a show than anything else. But you never know. There may be news. The major credit card networks are ending a requirement that you sign for most transactions, conceding it's not a great way to prove identity.
Agree.
Really?
I agree, though.
Really? You mean the people that check you out at Walgreens or Jewel aren't examining your signature closely?
Remember back in the day when you would actually sign and they would hold your credit card up to the signature to see if it matched?
Yeah. Dave, you and I remember a time where you had to pop in a price for something at the old grocery store.
Do remember that.
Later this month, four of the largest networks, American Express, Discover, MasterCard, and Visa, will stop requiring them to complete card transactions. You run the card, they have your number, the number is assigned to you, the signature means nothing.
Right.
Next! Governor Rauner is still fighting with Jeannie Ives. Governor Rauner said he reached out to Jeannie Ives. She never responded. This is after the election loss of Mrs. Ives. She said, no, he never reached out. Typical Rauner lying again. Can't we all get along?
In this case, I absolutely have no idea who's telling the truth and who's not.
I don't care. I really don't care. Next, Patrick Reed held on. Yesterday, Ricky Fowler had quite a run. Amazing birdie even on the 18th, one of the toughest holes on the golf course. With its traditional Sunday pin placement, Ricky Fowler shoved it to 14 under par. Jordan Spieth had an incredible Sunday and then hit the ball in the trees in what we like to call a Cochrane on the 18th tee.
Is that what they call it?
Yeah, and struggled to make par there and missed his putt. So he ended up with a bogey and finished at 13 in third place. Patrick Reed got it done. He had a 75-foot two-putt. He had to get done on the 17th green, his 71st hole. He hit the hole. If he doesn't hit the hole, that ball is here. It's still rolling.
Yeah. After Spieth caught him, and then he came up with that birdie, on 14, and went back in front. Up until then, you're thinking, okay, he's here in the crowd. Mm-hmm. Crowd's going up. They love Spieth. They don't like him.
Yeah.
Everything was going against him. So you got to give him some credit.
Well, give him credit. He won.
Yeah.
He absolutely won. Yeah,
why don't they like him?
He was and has been a very unliked player on tour for a number of reasons. One is cockiness.
No.
And
he's
two,
so young. Isn't
two
he?
Is 27. And two is reputation.
Oh.
Yeah. He's not a pleasant young man. But he's had a bit of a rough go. You know, and everybody can grow up at some point, and hopefully he has. Yes. Of course, the tour could use a bad guy, to be honest with you. This is not bad. You know, if you got a bad, an image as a bad guy.
Too many, clean-cut,
boring,
well-behaved
golfers. That's exactly right. And opening day at Wrigley, and we have the traditional opening day snow falling. Mm-hmm. Wrigley today will be jam-packed with people with dreams of another Cubs World Series.
At least nobody can say it's unfair because the White Sox had great weather for their home opener.
Nope, that's right.
I mean, it's same on both sides of town, snow and cold.
Bring your boots and your snow pants.
I was generously offered tickets to today's game.
And you generously turned them down?
Mondays. It's Abigail Grace Day.
Oh, that's right.
You can take her to the game. How about
not
that?
Not a chance. Not a chance. 6:31. Let's come back with the headlines next. Andre, right after this on 720 WGN.
That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
He's Northwestern Medicine VP. Call Dr. Most right now.
Dr. Kevin Most joins us. Hello, buddy.
How are you doing, man?
All right. Good morning to you, and thank you for the great care taken. Maureen, my wife Maureen, was in for a brief one-day situation last week, and your people were great as always.
Well, thanks. You know, it's always nice to hear that. We always want to hear when we can be better, but we also appreciate anybody, because you can share that with the staff, and it just makes the staff feel better, yeah. You
know? I appreciate it.
Now that you can see the people smiling around you, so.
Yeah, and I appreciate the fact that you lifted the ban on me coming inside. That was nice of you.
Yeah, that's just one day, though. You knew that.
Yeah. Special waiver. Yep. Doc, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, the pursuit of better health care starts here. We talked about organ donation last week, just briefly leading up to this week, so let's jump in. You want to hit the myth, the people that what people think and what's not true?
Yeah, you throw me the myth and I'll tell you what's true and not true.
You can't have an open casket at a funeral.
No, totally untrue. So you can definitely have an open casket. Even people that have cornea donations can still have an open casket. They do not do damage to the body, to the face, as much as they possibly can. So you certainly can have an open casket.
Rich people get organs first. Celebrities get organs first. Regular folks don't have a chance.
No, there's a national computer system that matches up, and it takes into consideration a whole bunch of things. Where the donated organ is, who needs it close by, how much time does it need to transport it. It's all computerized, and you really have no way to manipulate that. So that's a falsehood as well.
How about age? Is there an age limit to being a donor?
No. You know, people think, oh, you know what, I'm over 80, I guess I can't. But in fact, close to 40% of the donations are over the age of 60. And we've had donors as old as 93 years old. So that's false as well.
I don't want to leave my family to pay for this with that burden.
That's probably one of the biggest things people say, well, how much does this cost? And, you know, does insurance cover it? You have to realize that there is no cost for this at all to the patient or their family. The cost is all taken care of by the donation side of it. So there's no cost whatsoever.
If I'm in a hospital and they know I'm an organ donor, they're not going to try as hard to save me.
Yeah, that's probably one of the biggest ones. We say no, absolutely not. There's nothing we're going to change in your care. We're going to deliver care the way you want it delivered, and we're going to do everything we possibly can. And we have no clue, actually, if you're an organ donor until, you know, that decision needs to be made.
This might be from watching too much TV, but someone will take my organs and sell them.
Yeah. You know, you see those bad movies, someone wakes up in a bathtub of ice and their kidney is gone. That can't happen. You can't sell organs in the United States. It's against the law. So that's a falsehood as well.
And I want to pick up these last two here in a minute, because they're things that really I didn't know, but I want to bring them up in greater detail. Sandberg?
Unfortunately, you know, there was that tragedy in Canada, the junior hockey team,
no,
and the bus
story.
Crash on Friday. And one of the kids on the team a couple weeks ago just signed up to be an organ donor. So he lost his life, but six people are going to benefit from what he did.
And he just signed up.
He just signed up a couple weeks ago.
How about that?
His girlfriend put it on Facebook.
About that?
So I'm always surprised. You think you can donate, like, how many? I think you might help one person, but your organs can go to different people. And, you know, you have a lot of organs to give. Like,
and we have a story that is kind of remarkable, too, because Eddie Olchek, when he was diagnosed with cancer, we were all very concerned for Eddie, and Eddie was rightfully concerned as well, because as healthy as he was, and he's just about to turn 50, he was up against it. It was a bad deal. But he has really been a great story, as has Eddie Johnson. Eddie Johnson, the police superintendent. Where did he get his? From his son?
From his son.
From his son. How about that?
Mm-hmm. His kidney.
And, so, if you saw him before, you could see he was slowing down a little bit. You see him now in the news, and unfortunately we see him in the news a little bit. He looks great.
Yeah, he's lost a ton of weight, too.
Yeah, so that is one time where a live donor can give to somebody, right? We have two kidneys. You don't need two. So you can definitely can donate one. And there's unbelievably cool stories of essentially chain transplants where recently in Chicago, in February actually, six people wanted to donate kidneys. Let's say I wanted to donate a kidney to you, Steve, but you know our tissue doesn't match up. They did the math and they figured it all out. Six different people traded essentially kidneys with other people so that live donors were able to impact six different people.
How about that?
And, yeah, it was really cool.
Doctor,
and then they all got together and met each other.
That's super cool. Is there a way to specify? I have a friend for certain reasons wants to be a donor but just doesn't want to donate her eyes. I mean, is there a way that you can say, hey, you can have everything, just not organ X? You know,
absolutely.
Pick one. Okay.
Absolutely. 100%. Some people will say that. They don't want to donate their eyes. They don't want to donate their heart. You know, sometimes it's religious, sometimes it's spiritual, and they feel that way. But yeah, you just make your wishes clear.
And also, if you're sick, it doesn't mean you can't donate an organ, because you have healthy parts of your body that are very useful.
Yeah, there's very few things that will exclude you, one of them being HIV, and the other would be, let's say you had kidney cancer. Well, we certainly can't take that kidney and use that. So organs that have cancer in them, we can't use. HIV, there's just very few things that would stop you, preclude you from being a donor.
What about when your eyes are not that great? I mean, most people don't have perfect 20/20 vision. Does it matter?
Well, it depends, because it depends what we're looking for. So you don't have 20/20 vision, which is essentially in the back of your eye, but your cornea may be absolutely perfect. We do 48,000 cornea transplants, which allows people who are essentially blind to see again. Just think of that. 50,000 people have a cornea transplant which allows them to see. And the vision portion of it, the cornea and the lens may be fine. It's the back of your eye often that will cause parts of the blindness.
Doc, I've often heard from older family members, I'm going to need my body parts in the afterlife.
Yeah.
That's kind of a crazy excuse,
right?
That one
I can't answer.
Yeah, because in the afterlife, who knows? Maybe.
Or if I'm reincarnated, I might need them later. I don't
know. No, they need them now.
Yeah.
LifeGoesOn.com, by the way. It's very easy to sign up everywhere. Before we get off this topic, we had a woman on the show not too long ago, rightfully devastated about losing her daughter. Her daughter had suffered with alcohol and drug addiction over a period of time. But because she had been an alcoholic, and you are an alcoholic once you're an alcoholic, she was not able to achieve a priority spot on the list or stay on the list in the slot she had hoped for. I'm oversimplifying this, but you know where I'm going with this, Doc.
Yeah.
So what do we do?
Well, I shouldn't say it's a great story. It depends how you look at it. So this is a young lady who is 24 years old and had liver failure, acute liver failure, meaning it happened very quickly from alcohol use. It used to be that you used to have 6 months of sobriety. In other words, prove to me that you will take care of this organ and we will let you have this organ. So it's kind of a proof, especially when there is abuse used to cause the organ failure. The bad thing is that this person didn't have 6 months to live, because liver failure would have killed her, well within that period of time. But now you have hospitals that are saying, wait, time out. Some of these we need to relook at, and we need to relook at some of these rules, and liver failure from alcohol toxicity is definitely one of them. Because often with the right support system, someone will get that new liver and will end up with a life of sobriety. So we can't set rules that aren't totally fair and really don't look at it. So that's the ethical side of it. And fortunately, here in Chicago, Northwestern University of Chicago have taken that step back and said, maybe it's not 6 months. We're going to take it on a case-by-case basis, but if you have acute liver failure due to alcohol and you have a good abuse system and we think that you're going to do well, we are going to waive that 6 month sobriety and we are going to move forward.
It's really a tough, tough situation, but this woman's life, her legacy may be just that, the ability to adjust that rule.
Absolutely. That's, you know, the mother obviously, you know, very upset, family very upset, but they might look down and say, you know what, she's going to change a lot of lives.
Change the world.
Yep.
LifeGoesOn.com makes it easy. Stand by, Doc. I got a medical tech question when we come back. Dr. Kevin Moe, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. The pursuit of better health care starts here. Doc, this may be another one of these stories that we can't do complete justice to, but the fact of the matter is medical technology gets better every single day, and medical record keeping does as well. Long gone are the days of the clipboard at the end of the bed, right?
Yeah, they really are. Long gone are the days when you went into your doctor's office and he wrote everything down on a little 3x5 card, and And long gone are the days of the Seinfeld episode where George was concerned what his doctor wrote in his medical records.
So. Right, right, right. And you try to get the folder in a clandestine mission. So what is Apple doing?
Well, Apple's interesting. I'd say Apple's taken something that says, you know what? Medical records are your records. That is your information. You actually own it, and you should have access to it. And you say, well, wait a second, I already have that. I have my chart. Well, unfortunately, my chart is institution specific. So if you go to Northwestern, you'll have a Northwestern my chart. If you go to Rush, you're going to have their episode of my chart or whatever they want to call it. And what Apple has said is our care is way too fragmented. We are going to put that all in one place and make it easy for patients to get. So they're running a test right now across the country where they're saying, you tell us where you've been, we'll add that in, we've had these institutions agree, and we're going to put all your records at one place on your iPhone where you can have access to them.
That's an absolute dream, because I think we've all been in a situation, Doc, where you either change doctors or for whatever reason, and you have to hand carry your medical records over. So will it kind of be now like a Walgreens or a Jewel-Osco that all your prescriptions are just right there in one database?
Exactly. That's exactly it. So not only will your medications be there, but the rest of your history will be there as well. So you make a good point. You change doctors, and that doctor says, well, you know what? I'm no longer affiliated with Hospital X. I'm now with Hospital Y. And you're like, well, wait, all my records are over at Hospital X. This will allow those to all be put together in one place. And again, it allows you as the patient, they're your records. You control them. You should be able to look at them at any time.
And that'll help, too, with parents who, if you're taking care of maybe a parent or a grandparent and you don't know their medications.
Unbelievable. I can't tell you how many people come in and I ask them, so what medicines are you on? I say, I take a blue one for my blood pressure. I take a white one for my cholesterol. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's great.
And one of them is really big.
Right.
Yeah. And then you say, well, we need to do this test. Oh, I just had that test done at Hospital X. Well, we don't have those records. Therefore, we're going to have to repeat it. So not only is it going to be safer care, it's going to be more economical care. So Apple has looked at us and said, you guys in healthcare have no clue of what's going on as far as this. We're going to help you organize it.
How does all this tie into insurance? We'll take that up on the next episode of Kevin Most, Dr. Superhero. Thanks, buddy.
You got it. Take care. Have a great day.
Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, the pursuit of better health care starts here. Speaking of health, our friend Dr. Ian Smith is here, trying to save us from ourselves with The Clean 20, a new book I insist you buy today. But first at 6:58, back after this. News coming up, 720 WGN.
Work it, make it, do it. Makes us all the better, faster, stronger.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Dr. Ian Smith, man, I was talking to Michael O'Hanlon about the news channels fighting over him. You should see the fights that go on over Dr. Ian.
I know.
Got Rachel Ray punching out the doctors. I mean, you know, everybody wants a little bit of this. Celebrity Fit Club, Rachel Ray. Look, Dr. Ian's back with a brand new book called The Clean 20. 20 foods, 20 days, total transformation. How are you, my friend?
I'm great.
You look great. You look great. You look good, man. You look like you're ready.
You know, I got to tell you, so this is the official kickoff of my tour, by the way.
Nice.
Right now, this morning, here in Chicago.
Nice.
I'll be on Good Morning America tomorrow in New York. But
those hacks.
Yeah, right. I'll tell them you said that.
Yeah, please do. The book, which I'm holding up for you people watching on video, The Clean 20. All right, now look, I've had some success since the last time you saw me dropping some weight with a radical program. Why don't you write this down? This could be your new book.
Okay.
Eat Less, Move More.
Jeez.
Eat less, move more.
I like that's crazy. That's good titling.
It's crazy. It's crazy complicated. But the Clean 20 could kick it up a notch.
The Clean 20 is a program that really is about hitting the reset button. It's not really a diet, though in 20 days, the average weight loss is about 10 pounds. But it's really about feeling good, eating foods that are going to strengthen you. People report that their energy levels are higher, their blood sugars levels are lower, blood cholesterol lower. So people just feel good. And it's very accessible. This is not one of those things where you have to go to a niche gourmet store to find these foods. These are actually regular foods. I mean, there's chicken, there's turkey, there are eggs, there's dairy, which is a lot of diets say you can't have dairy. I love dairy, great protein and calcium and other vitamins. But the idea behind the Clean 20 is that for 20 days, you're going to make your 20 clean foods list. And I give you I don't pick it for you, by the way. I give you all these different options so it's customizable to you. And then you go at it. And people say, that what they tell me is the easiest plan I've ever written. I didn't set out to do that, but they say it's so easy to follow.
Well, that's the thing, because everybody wants it easy.
Right.
You know, yeah. And you've made it easy. You
got to
get two copies. Remember that. You get two copies. You're careless. You leave one on the train. You leave one somewhere. And if you download it, you might lose your phone. So two copies of the Clean 20, Dr. Ian Smith. Andrea.
I love rule number one, dairy is good, because you always hear, like, as you said, ban the milk, ban the cream. And I also want you to talk about, too, reintroducing the foods. There are the banned items, but reintroducing things. And you can't eat pizza, cookies. It's okay.
Listen, people have to understand, if you've read any of my books before, people know that I always talk about being realistic. I mean, the idea that people are going to eat rabbit food, except for present company included.
Exactly.
The idea that you're going to eat rabbit food for the rest of your life is just not feasible, right? People are going to have pizza. We're in Chicago. They're going to have hamburgers.
Not everyone's weird like Dave.
Well, I didn't want to call him out, but you guys called him out.
Thanks.
but the idea is that, you know, I typically call it the 70-30 rule, which is 70% good or healthy, 30% have some fun, because, you know, life is short and life is not about, you know, being so restrictive. So when after the 20 days, people say, well, what do I do? Well, there's a whole section about how to reintroduce foods. Certain foods, I hope after 20 days, you want to stay away from. And by the way, this is about reducing the processed foods that we're consuming. Our grocery shelves are loaded with synthetic chemicals and hormone disruptors, all kinds of gunk and junk that manufacturers put into our food. This says if you eat foods in their more natural state, after 3 days, wow, do you feel different.
Look, I love the berries. I love the cheese. I love the chicken. I'm not so great on the chickpeas. So what am I going to do about the chickpeas?
Swap it out.
What am I going to swap it with?
Geez, you can have lentils.
Okay,
you can have white beans. You
keep
can have kidney beans.
Keep going.
You don't like any of that?
Nope.
Do you like hummus? You don't like hummus?
Yeah, I'm so big on the hummus.
You're not big on the hummus?
Not so big on the hummus.
You like nuts?
But the list you just gave me of those, hummus is going to be the winner.
Okay.
What
so,
about nuts, though? He said you can do walnuts.
I like nuts.
Cashew.
Yeah. I like nuts. I'm a nut man.
Yeah. So if you look in the book, it has something called Basket Buddies on page 16. So, you know, things that you don't like, you say, okay, I'll try something else. So on page 16, it says, if you don't like kale, for example, you can have arugula, bok choy, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, cauliflower. If you don't like nuts, you can have sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, cheese. So I really give you different types of options.
Yeah, the options are there.
That you can sub in and out. And some people have food allergies or just food preferences. This is why I make it customizable for you.
Now, again, I don't want to bring Dave into this, because I'm Dave is remarkable. Dave is 109 years old. And look how good he looks. Look how fantastic he looks.
Jeans and diet.
Yeah.
Well, it is part of it.
Yeah, he eats incredibly healthy, and he works out every day. So he does a nice job. But he's a big booze hound. What about booze on this?
Here's the deal. I don't want to be a downer, but we're trying to eat clean for 20 days only.
Right.
And so if you could stay away from the alcohol for 20 days,
yeah,
you could have it coming back. But for 20 days, let's try to really reduce all those processed things. Now, people also talk about coffee. Now, the reason why I say no coffee at first, is because people dump all that crap in it from, you know, mocha, venta, latte, all that kind of stuff. So if you're going to have black coffee, that's different, right? I'm okay with black pure coffee. It's all the sugar and the creamers and stuff in there. No
and,
good.
And what? No artificial sweeteners in the coffee too, right?
There you go.
That's always my problem.
Right. Anything artificial, no good for the Clean 20.
What about the sweeteners like Truvia and Stevia, some of those that are supposed to be so-called natural sweeteners?
Right, but go organic though, because sometimes those quote-unquote natural sweeteners, the manufacturers put stuff in it. So when I typically don't say do things organically, but if you're looking for something that's clean, you have to go organic in that particular situation.
Is there any regulation over you labeling stuff organic?
Oh my goodness, huge regulation. And
so the FDA will hammer you if you don't do it.
Completely hammer you.
Okay.
And there are all kinds of stipulations and requirements. So.
And you say no soda too, so that means no Diet Coke, no Diet Pepsi?
Particularly no Diet Coke. Jeez, I mean, you talk about synthetic, you know, mania. It's synthetic stuff all over the place. The idea is for 20 days, you are really going to clean your system out, and you are going to reduce all these toxic byproducts that we're consuming in all these packaged goods. You go to any grocery store and look at the back of a label. If it has more, my general rule of thumb is if it has more than 5 ingredients, it ain't clean.
Right. You know? Well, and also, I heard, I don't think you said this, but I heard from somebody, if you can't pronounce it, it ain't clean.
I can't pronounce some of this stuff, and I went to school for it.
Back to beverages for a second.
Yeah.
Water the best thing?
Love water. Now, I love water with some kick to it, so I like some flavor. I like to squeeze some lemons, some citrus, some apples. Any, I just don't like plain water. I'm on the record for saying that. But if I can, so in my refrigerator, I have this big distilled, you know, thing that I bought at Target, and I just slice lemons up in it, and it has a little flavor to me.
Look at you! Look at you! Look, he's got a spa. He's got a spa right in his house.
Getting fancy, right?
He's got some Enya music every time he opens the refrigerator. What about ounces per day? Are you a big proponent of the half your body weight thing, or is that just a hook?
That's one way. You know, it's typically most people. It's probably 8 to 10 cups a day is probably what is necessary. By the way, the number is based on how much you typically are losing per day. That's really, so it's about replacing the water you're losing during the day. And for most people, not everyone, for most people, it's about 8 to 10 glasses a day, cups a day.
Okay, vegetables are I know fresh are the best, yes. But it is winter in Chicago. Are you okay with frozen vegetables and canned vegetables?
Yes, and there's a rule that says frozen and canned is fine. Make sure that it is low sodium if it's going to be canned. And if you can try organic, try organic. Prices for organic, by the way, have come down a lot. It's gotten real competitive these days. So if you can find organic vegetables, that is best.
Okay. Perfect.
While I ask my question, Steve, will you please turn to page 36?
Page 36 in our hymnal. Doctor, what about... Commissioners, go to page 36.
What about coconut water? Coconut water as opposed to just... plain old water.
Yeah, coconut water, wonderful. I use that a lot in my smoothies. Coconut water has a little flavor to it, but not too much. But the idea, once again, is if it's going to be coconut water, you want it to be really, really pure coconut water. Once again, manufacturers slide all this stuff in these things that are otherwise healthy. So in fact, we got a group on Facebook. So if you want to join our Facebook group, it's called The Clean 20, the numerals 20. But they talk about all the different ways to make the substitutions. And like you just asked about coconut water, and I got to tell you, the reason why I am always excited is because people who do the program, they teach me, you know, they say, well, I tried this from this store.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's really good.
Yeah, so you can tweak it.
Yeah.
The coconut water, flavored or not?
None.
No flavor.
No flavor. Because the flavor is going to be...
You sure? Have you had plain coconut water? Are you sure? It tastes like a sneaker.
No, no, no. No, well, I don't like coconut water by itself. Yeah. No, I agree with you, by the way, Steve. Yeah, yeah. I don't like it by itself. I like it in something. So mix if I put it into a smoothie or something like that, then you can't. But no, I don't want to... I'll just take straight water rather than coconut water.
By the way, we have Sox tickets coming up in just a second. Going to get a headlines tease from you first. Mm-hmm. But before we do that, Dave pointed out page 36. We'll come back and talk about this as well. The header on page 36, kale, what the hell were you thinking? That's all in the book. The Clean 20, Ian K. Smith. The doctor is here. More in a moment.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Sox tickets. Coming up, not one, not two, not three, four against the world champion Houston Astros. I might ring a bell with you. I think it was somewhere around 2005 where the Sox and the Astros got together.
Mm-hmm.
And it went pretty well.
It did.
So we'll see how it goes with the you and them Friday when you win these tickets. Coming up in a second. A couple of questions here for Dr. Ian Smith. Steve is in Schaumburg. Steve, what are your issues? Steve, talk to us.
Dr. Smith, thank you for taking my call. You know, my problem is I'm a bigger guy. When I say bigger, I mean dangerously healthy bigger. But I'm over 315 pounds. I'm 43 years old, so weight does not come off easily now. And I'll be honest, I go to sleep at night fearing I'm not going to wake up in the morning because of my size.
How tall are you?
For me to work out. I'm 5'10".
Okay.
It's hard for me to work out. So I'm wondering, would this give me a start to being able to, you know, not only drop some weight, but to be able to get healthy enough to try to start working out, to kick in that second aspect to be able to...
Right. Is this the right program for you? I get it, man. I totally get it. Hold on. Don't hang up.
You know, it's interesting. So I always say that people try to do too much too fast, mm-hmm. you know, especially when they feel like they're in this kind of situation where they're facing serious consequences. So, yes, the Clean 20 would be great because it could ease you into eating better. It doesn't ask you to eat perfectly. It's only 20 days. But the reason why I only made it 20 days was because if you can do these 20 days and then you transition out of it to another program, you now kind of have this jump start. So, yeah, this would be great for you. We have people who are 380 pounds, 400 pounds who have done the plan in our group. So I encourage you to definitely join our Facebook group. It's called The Clean 20. And follow me on Instagram, which is at Dr. Ian Smith. Spell the doctor out. But yeah, and you know what?
We'll get him a book.
Yeah.
We'll get him a book.
Yeah, do me a favor. Email me. My email address is theclean20@gmail.com, 20, theclean20@gmail.com. And we'll send you a link to our workout, you know. We got DVDs.
Yeah, and Steve, Steve, I give you credit for calling and talking about it because that's the first step. Now do something about it today and do something else about it tomorrow and get the book and get on it. You're going to be fine, man.
Most definitely. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Appreciate you listening. Good dude. Randy. Randy in Antioch. Yes, Randy.
Yeah, I'd like to ask the doctor about once you've come off the cleanse, what kind of alcohol should you consume? I had heard that you should ditch beer and sip vodka, and I didn't know if that was true or not.
Yeah, is there a healthy alcohol choice once you go through the clean tonic? Like you talk about don't drink diet soda.
Yeah.
What about booze?
Red wine is the best, obviously, because of resveratrol, which is a great full of antioxidants, but no one's only going to drink wine. It's not necessarily. So you start talking about vodka and gin and whiskey. Listen, they're all pretty much the same thing. It's the volume, though, right? It's the volume. So, mm-hmm. You know, the AHA.
Gasoline.
Yeah, well,
same kind of thing.
For some people. But the idea is if you had, for men, you know, 1.5 mixed drinks, you know, believe it or not, every day. But it's believed to be fine. For women, it's only one. But if you're going to lead towards a drink, maybe one mixed drink, maybe a glass of wine, you know. Alcohol is not the enemy, but it's when we consume 3 and 4 at a sitting that becomes the problem.
Everything
in
moderation.
You can't stockpile it, too, by the way.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to drink all week and then
I'll have five tonight. I'll have five tonight, nothing
doesn't
for 3 days.
That way.
Yeah.
All right, late night snacking, I know, is probably, it's my biggest vice. You know, you're sitting there, it's at 7, 8 o'clock. Before you go to bed, you start to snack. Can you use one of your snacks, if you've gone through the whole day on your regime, can you use one of your substitute snacks as, quote unquote, a late night snack?
1,000%. So you raise two issues. One is eating late. So I recommend do not eat your last meal within 90 minutes of going to sleep. This is a critical mistake.
And by the way, that is completely doable.
Yeah absolutely. Yeah. And by the way, if people would just not eat right before going to sleep, they could lose weight if they just stopped doing that. That's a bad habit, number one. Number two is that snacking is good. I love snacking. So in the book, we have more than 60 recipes for meals. We have snack options. So all this is the book. I recommend people eat late night snacks if they're hungry rather than eating a meal. Okay, so 150 calories or less is not going to hurt you, then put your butt to bed. I mean, simple as that. I mean, but don't sit there and gorge on, you know, like 2,000 calories.
Ice cream.
And then ice cream and all that kind of stuff. Forget it. You're not going to win. I mean, seriously.
It's Dr. Ian Smith. Again, the book is called The Clean 20, number one New York Times bestselling author of Shred. And look, there's a reason you see Dr. Smith everywhere. It's because he's great. He knows what he's doing. He's great. He looks great on TV because, you know, he's in shape. Some of these doctors, they look great on TV. You know what it is? It's camera tricks. They come in, they're 500 pounds. Not Dr. Smith. Getting it done. And you say popcorn's good.
Yeah, AirPop popcorn is great.
None of that oil stuff.
Well, oil, you know, oil brings other things with it. But I like AirPop. I make a popcorn called Shred Pop. I'm not the only AirPop popcorn, so people should try to get AirPop popcorn. But yeah, it's light. It's a whole grain, believe it or not. Has all three parts of the grain. It's when we add, you know, the butter and all the sugar. And so, once again, this is a situation. Have some AirPop popcorn. I mentioned it as a potential snack. But be careful of all the additives and preservatives that go in it.
There's one type of graphical error in the book, in the clean snacks chapter. You have wasabi peas in the snack list. That's got to be a mistake. What are you talking about, wasabi peas?
Delicious. You don't like them?
They're great.
Aren't they great?
I love them.
Aren't they great? They're awesome.
I eat them by the handful.
Yeah. They're awesome. All day long, man.
Ridiculous. It's Dr. Ian Smith. Always great to see you. Congrats. I know you're just kicking off the book tour, Good Morning America, this week and a bunch of other places.
And The View. Yeah, check me out.
Right.
And hey, send me an email, theclean20@gmail.com. If you pick up a copy of the book, you send me an email. I'll send you a link to a DVD download. You know, that'd be pretty.
And you want to know how people are doing.
Yeah.
That's great feedback for you.
Absolutely.
Want them to get the book and how they're doing.
Absolutely.
The Clean 20. Get it. Use it for curls.
There you
start
go.
Off there, right?
Section before you open it up. Back too.
We're going to play some golf this year.
Yes, we are.
All right.
Home and home, baby.
Okay.
7:31, headlines next, 720 WGN. And by the way, four Sox tickets. White Sox Astros, caller 7 right now. 312-981-7200. If you know Tim Anderson's number, you win.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Ryan Nobles from CNN joins us in a second. Speaking of CNN, CNN and all the major news outlets owe a debt of gratitude, and I know Ryan will agree with me on this, Chuck Todd. Chuck Todd, our friend Chuck Todd, stepping up yesterday when Peter Navarro, one of Trump's main folks on the advisory side, tried to throw the fake news comment out about the Washington Post. Here's a clip from Meet the Press.
When you read stuff in the Washington Post, frankly, that's fake news most of the time.
All right. I think that expression is a pretty unfair thing to say about a major news organization.
Well, not to the Washington Post.
Navarro,
I mean,
that's a cheap shot.
Mr. Todd, that is not a cheap shot, because if you look at the newspapers that I read every day across the spectrum, yeah, the Washington Post, in my judgment, tends to attack the president more than any other newspaper in its news stories. You can do anything you want in your editorial, sir, but you cannot do that in your news stories.
I'd say the term fake news is not exactly a way to hold up the First Amendment, especially when the Russian government just this morning is calling fake news using that phrase.
I used to deliver the Washington Post in high school, yeah, in Bethesda Chevy Chase, and guess what? That was a good paper back then. It's not right now.
Peter Navarro, I will leave it there.
The idea that if you criticize me, you're making it up,
right,
is a continued nonsense that we hear. And we need to have people stand up to that BS every time it comes up. Our friend Ryan Nobles joins us from CNN. Good morning, Ryan.
Good morning, Steve. You know, and I can't agree with you more. And I think the way Chuck handled it was really great. You know, I think, you know, when I anchored that 2 weekends ago, Stephen Moore is one of our economic analysts at CNN. He works for us, and I appreciate it. I think his point of view is good. And he called the Washington Post a propaganda outlet, and I had to call him on that. I mean, you can't just allow those little slight digs to get into the atmosphere when you're having these conversations, because it just undoes the credibility of these outlets that are working very hard and journalists who are breaking legitimate stories that the American people need to know about.
You know, and Ryan, you and everybody that does this on a daily basis suffer from the same problem now. One is the labeling. But second to that is fatigue. And I had a conversation with somebody I have great respect for over the weekend who said, I can't take it. I can't hear it. I can't watch it. I can't listen to it. I care about what happens in this country. I care about who's running the country. I care if we have a crime family in the White House, but I can't take it. But here is the journalistic weight that goes with it. If the president says or does something, that's news. And the journalist's job is to report the news. You can consume it in any way you choose, but to label it fake news or just shut it off isn't helping anybody.
Yeah, and you know, it's by design, frankly, Steve. The wearing down of the American public and their perceptions and their trust in media institutions, this isn't an accident, you know, but when you continue to pile on and it just becomes more than the average American can handle, that's, I think, to the president's advantage, because if people stop paying attention, then he's left free to many respects. And, you know, the idea that, you know, you can specifically lay out previous policy positions that Donald Trump has pointed out and then report what he actually follows through on, and somehow that's fake news. I mean, I just don't understand where that comes from. I think it's an unfair attack on every level. And to a certain extent, you know, it's our job as reporters to be better than we've ever been. You really can't make a mistake. But it's on the consumer, too, to pick and choose and truly vet these news organizations that they're getting their information from, because hopefully the cream will rise to the top. I still believe that that's ultimately what's going to happen.
And I'll leave it with this, too, because we don't want to come back and talk about the fact that Trump, for the first time ever, said something negative about Putin. We've got a million things to get to. But I bring this up too, Ryan, to folks, and I'm sure you do as well. If somebody says fake news, fake news, fake news, I go, what do you do for a living? Well, I'm a plumber.
Right.
Well, what if I was your competition and I just started calling you a fake plumber?
Mm-hmm.
Go, well, it's not true. Well, how do you know what you're saying is true about respected news organizations who gather this news and disseminate this news? Just because you disagree with it doesn't mean it's made up. We could start throwing that around all day. He's the fake president. We're fake.
Yeah.
You know, you're a fake plumber. You're a fake Uber driver. It's nonsense. Grow up.
I've talked to groups, Ryan, and I know you have too, and that's been a question at the end where there's a Q&A session. What do I think of fake news? And I say,
it's not a category.
I always say fake news is a fake term, and it's just maddening to have to defend. There was a great example what you just said. It's maddening to have to defend your profession and reporting. Just because something isn't liked,
right,
doesn't mean it's not true and it's fake.
If you read or see something you don't like, the next thing you should do is read or see that in depth to see what their point is.
Right.
Right. And your and to your point, Steve, about if we were to call him the fake president, mm-hmm. I think that Donald Trump understands that he is vulnerable to that as well. It's one of the reasons that he battles back so harshly yeah. against the Russia investigation, because he's concerned about his own credibility. So as much as he dishes it out, he understands that he can't take it, and that's part of the reason that he's built up this guard around him when it comes to a full and complete vetting of exactly what Russia did in the 2016 election.
Boy, you make a good point, too, when you talk about stalling, waiting out America, fatiguing America. The Trump White House has done an exceptional job of rope-a-doping us all into a position where we just go, I'm done. I can't do it. But you have to. You got to suck it up, America, and you got to believe that it's too important to turn your eyes away from. Now, having said all that, when we come back, Ryan, I hope you don't have a heart condition, because I'm going to compliment the president. The president did something yesterday morning that none of us saw coming. He criticized Vladimir Putin when we continued.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
The great Ryan Nobles from CNN is with us. Nice enough to give us some time every Monday morning. We always appreciate it. So yesterday morning, Donald Trump, the president of these United States, who hasn't said a negative thing about Vladimir Putin ever, yesterday labeled him as the co-conspirator in this horrific chemical attack in Syria. What is the talk of that this morning in Washington?
Well, the Russian government overnight put out a statement that they believe that there were no traces of chemical weapons found in this attack, which, if you see the pictures that are coming out of Syria, seems laughable. And I think that this becomes a huge foreign policy showdown to a certain extent for Donald Trump. Now, keep in mind, Steve, that about a week ago, Donald Trump was telling everyone that he was ready to pull all U.S. forces out of Syria, that he was going to wash his hands of the whole mess. And now he finds an escalation of this problem, an escalation that comes from the Assad regime, which is largely propped up by Vladimir Putin and Russia. So the question is, how does the United States react? Is this now going to turn to it seemed like just as early as last week, it seemed as though the idea was we're just going to allow this Assad problem to fester and just sit in this place because there's nothing we can do about it. But if Assad continues with this, very difficult and harsh attacks on his own people, I don't know how much longer the world community can just sit by the wayside and allow it to happen. Donald Trump talked to Emmanuel Macron in France yesterday. He's going to talk with some other European leaders. I mean, they got to do something, Steve. The question is what? Does it mean more airstrikes? If there are airstrikes, who do you even attack? It's impossible to try and figure this out. But this is a problem that is not going away as much as the president would like it to.
There's another story that's kind of bubbling under, which is significant because it involves Jared Kushner. Jared Kushner, his father went to jail. And there's a whole backstory to Chris Christie and how his involvement in putting Jared Kushner's father in jail probably kept him out of this administration. That's not the important piece. The important piece is the Kushner family's future financial survival depends on the success of the 666 building in downtown New York. And it is a giant cash black hole. Well, now we get an announcement that the Kushners are going to buy out the partner and own it outright. Well, when we know that Jared Kushner has no security clearance and we know that he had extensive meetings with the Saudi prince, how is this not ugly and sniffable?
Right, and exactly. And the other thing that isn't 100% clear, the other thing that isn't 100% clear is how the Kushners can afford this. They were just weeks ago, looking for heavy levels of financing from partners around the world and were turned down in a number of different places. So the idea that they're going to be able to come up with some sort of a financial package to buy out these former partners seems a bit mystifying. They're a private company, so there isn't a whole lot that is public about the way they do business, and that's part of the problem. You've got the son of Charles Kushner, who sits just a few feet away from Donald Trump every day, is a member of his family, is obviously one of his closest advisors, is at the center of some of the most important deals that the president is trying to make. And Charles Kushner even said this in an interview with the New York Times, basically every financial transaction his family makes now is going to be under the microscope of whether or not their access to the president influenced this in some way, shape, or form. And I think the Kushner family's got to be 100% transparent about this, Otherwise, the questions are going to be raised, and it is going to be another headache for Donald Trump that he just doesn't want to deal with.
Can you see a meeting with the Saudis? Maybe a little exchange of information for a big pile of cash? It's not crazy. All right, what else?
All right, Ryan, also want to ask you about, wouldn't be another week without another another shakeup. National Security Council spokesman Michael Anton is leaving the administration. We just found out about that yesterday, confirmed. He's the latest, obviously. Who could be next?
Yeah, well, Anton wasn't a big surprise. He's kind of a McMaster guy. So when McMaster went and he was McMaster's primary spokesperson, not too many of us were surprised that he was going to go, although Michael Anton repeatedly had told our White House colleagues that he wasn't going anywhere. So that wasn't that big of a surprise. You know, I think, you know, we had originally thought, if you asked me this question on Friday, I would have told you for sure that EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt has got to be the one whose head is on the chopping block. But after the president's tweet over the weekend where he was basically like, yeah, I'm not worried about any of these scandals because this guy's enacting my agenda, so Pruitt's fine, don't worry about Pruitt. I think that Pruitt's probably okay. I think the person that continues to be on the hot seat the most is John Kelly, the chief of staff, and the way that the president responded to Pruitt over the weekend, I think, is the best evidence of that, because Pruitt, what we're hearing is that that Kelly has recommended that Pruitt be fired, and that Trump has pushed back on that. So it's just very clear that Kelly doesn't have nearly the influence he had in the White House, and I just don't know how much longer a guy that's been a general and has had control of every situation that he's been in wants to continue to be a part of what is clearly a very chaotic situation.
Just another slow day for Ryan.
Right.
Just another slow week in Washington. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks, guys. Have a great one.
Ryan Nobles. Thanks, from CNN. Ryan.
John Bolton, by the way, his first official day is today.
The mustache.
Mm-hmm.
Starts today. We'll come back with the news next. Dean coming up and a lot more show. We're not even at halftime yet. The band's not even on the field. This is 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should.
Sponsored by brand new Smile Dental Implant Center. Because you're always smiling when you listen to the Deed segment.
I think I might like to get a dental implant. I don't really
you
need
it. You mean like backup teeth?
Yeah, just for like an extra set.
Well, you're on TV. You always should have a backup plan.
No.
So yesterday, I'm listening to you. I'm not minding my own business. I'm not hurting anybody. And all of a sudden, you're whipping out the Greek. You should have heard the Greek coming out of his mouth yesterday.
We were whipping it out yesterday. That's very true.
Are you fluent, or was that all gibberish?
I know enough words that I usually can understand what's going on, but I would not say that I am fluent.
Well, you were talking. You were talking the Greek.
You did a great interview, Dean, with the Metropolis. That email circulated throughout the Greek community all day yesterday on Easter. Happy Easter, by the way.
We had there's a new head of the Greek Archdiocese in Chicago.
Yeah, I know.
He's like the Cardinal Supich for the Greek community.
He's called Metropolitan Nathaniel is his name.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a man of faith, but also, as I learned in this interview, a diehard Yankees fan, and I've pledged to convert him. He's one of the. He's originally from New York, and he's one of those New Yorkers that think that their pizza is the greatest pizza.
Oh, shut up!
In the world, so
sober up.
You know, I'm going to take him on a little Uncle Dean tour of Chicago and see if we can wise him up a little bit.
Nothing better than a cocky New Yorker who thinks they have great pizza the first time they take a bite of the Lou Malnati's or any of the great pizzas in town.
Yeah.
And they go, oh, my God, what am I missing here?
Right. And when he says, oh, my God, he means it.
Yeah, because he's got the direct line.
That's right.
Yeah. Celebrity tweets. Let's go to Sandberg.
So I've got two celebrity tweets here, Dean, that I didn't see on your list from the same person. Lil Wayne. He said, I just left the Masters. What up? One of the most pristine and prestigious experiences ever.
Really?
Great bleep, Reed. Good go at it, Rory. You were all bleep. I'd be back. And then he said, I'm sure I've lost weight due to all the walking. I loved every minute of it. Shout out to Jamzy and the homie for showing us a good time. One time in the air for Patrick America.
Who amongst us hasn't heard that exact conversation on the grounds of Augusta National?
Right.
And he said, be sure to watch a video of how to act before you go. because otherwise you're not allowed to be there. It was awesome. I need one of those. Yeah,
the rules are something else.
Lil Wayne followed the rules.
Lil Wayne.
He had a good time. Patrick America.
Lil Wayne. Was Flo Rida there?
I'm not sure, and I'm not sure who Jamzy and the homie are. What up, though?
I could just see some of the old school Southerners with Lil Wayne walking around thinking he's a caddy.
I like how you white people are calling him Little Wayne.
Little Wayne. L-I-T-T-L-E. Little Wayne.
Oh, look at the man with the tattoos on his face.
Look, it's small Wayne.
Must be Little Wayne.
All right, so how was L.A.?
It was all right.
Yeah?
It's okay.
All right. How was the weekend box office?
The weekend box office was pretty amazing for this film that I loved so much, A Quiet Place. John Krasinski, Emily Blunt took in $50 million. Second biggest domestic opening of the year. Everybody who has seen this movie is raving the same way that I did about it. This movie where, you know, aliens have taken over the earth. If they can't hunt you unless they hear you. So you have to keep perfectly quiet. And this movie is about a family attempting to do that to survive during this. So $50 million for them. Ready Player One, the Steven Spielberg movie, dropped to number two. Black Panther. Blockers was after that, and then Black Panther. And then movie whose name I'm completely forgetting right now.
The other one. The other one that you're trying to remember.
If only I imagine. If only I imagine. Came in at number five. But the big deal for Black Panther, even still dropping to the number four spot, now has taken in enough money that it is the third highest grossing film of all time. It has now surpassed Titanic and is just behind Star Wars, The Force Awakens, and Avatar.
Chadwick Boseman, the star of Black Panther, was on Saturday Night Live. He was great. We'll play a clip of that coming back. And if you don't know Chadwick Boseman, he's just one of the greatest actors working today. And he's been doing it, you know, in front of people at the highest level for about 10 minutes. I love him.
As he pointed out on Saturday Night Live, he's played Jackie Robinson. He's played James Brown. He's played Thurgood Marshall. He kind of specializes in all these historic figures. He is really quite the actor.
He's amazing.
And kills it in Black Panther as well.
Speaking of SNL, they had a Nike commercial for women on the leggings.
It was great.
I'm going to post it on our Facebook page. Yeah. So funny.
I got to say, we always talk about Kate McKinnon.
Yeah.
The female cast has Aidy Bryant.
Yes.
And who's the woman that comes on to the boxer's girlfriend on Weekend Update? She's tremendous as well.
Cecily Strong's in that.
Cecily Strong's great.
Yeah.
But the female cast of SNL is as good as it's ever been. Yeah.
When they say wearing the workout pants, they're good to wear on the couch and the other side of the couch and use them as a napkin. It's very funny. So I'm going to post that link.
One of their first ones was with the twin bed. Remember making out in my twin bed?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Jimmy Fallon was the guest. Yeah. Hilarious. They are so funny when
they
do those shorts.
We're going to do it
shorts.
In my twin bed.
Yep.
It's 8:18. More with Dean in a moment.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor. Channel 972. Oh, 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 oh.
Back to Dean and
Steve. We have entertainment breaking news.
Oh no, what's going on?
Something that just happened a few minutes ago in Philadelphia, where Bill Cosby's trial is beginning again today.
Yep,
the retrial.
Yep,
a topless protester has been taken into custody after charging.
What's his name?
No, it was. Turns out that it was a woman who was topless and taken into custody after charging Bill Cosby as he walked into the Philadelphia courthouse. She jumped over a barricade, lunged toward Cosby, but was intercepted by sheriff's deputies there. Cosby seemed startled, as you might be if a topless protester was lunging at you. Protesters started chanting at him, "Women's life, lives matter," written in red ink across her chest and stomach.
As a female, I would just say I don't think that's the best way to get your message across. No. If you're trying to pursue the Me Too, the Time's Up avenue.
The topless part, I guess, was to get attention. But I think once you jump a barricade and attack a celebrity, you're probably going to get on the news anyway.
With red paint written on your
chest. So keep your shirt on.
Right.
Well, that's your breaking.
Just my thought.
We'll have updates, Steve, as it comes in. We'll break into regular programming.
In other news of the female nature, Cardi B announced she was pregnant.
She on Saturday Night Live, she's been.
She announced it with her dress.
Yeah, she was wearing an extremely form-fitting white dress.
That same thing I wear on a Saturday.
Clearly shows both, clearly showing baby bumps. And she said that she didn't reveal the pregnancy before then because she was concerned about all the haters, and certainly there were immediately following her disclosure, I guess you might say, on television. It was posted, and all the haters, all the crazy talk started on social media, and she says, this is why I didn't want to say anything. People want to scrutinize and destroy something that's supposed to be a blessing.
Well, yeah, and there are always going to be horrible, terrible people online, but it's not easy not to read it. I mean, it really isn't. You tell yourself, don't look at the nasty text, don't look at the nasty social media posts, but, look, celebrities are human beings. You can hurt them.
Yeah, this goes for everybody, celebrity or not. Really, you just ignore the comment section because...
You have to.
It's completely unfiltered, and there's no consequence.
You ever find yourself, because I do,
the craziest things.
You ever find, and not just stuff about me, but you ever find yourself where you're reading, and then for whatever reason, you see a series of tweets or comments that you might not otherwise read, and you go, what horrible thing could be going on in this person's life to say mm-hmm. something like that?
Yep.
Jimmy Kimmel, when people were wishing that Jimmy Kimmel's baby would die, yeah. Are you kidding me?
Yep.
I just don't understand it.
I actually had something like that very similar happen when the Mel Gibson crazy tirade was going on. I had some extremely vicious, extremely vicious, violent threats against my family by people who were self-proclaimed skinheads, self-proclaimed Mel Gibson fans. It's just crazy. The whole thing is crazy.
And a lot of guts behind a keyboard anonymously. Yeah. The same sort of people that wouldn't dare say it in person.
Yeah. And I said, Steve, I know that's you.
That was well. If it was about your family,
you're not supposed to sign your name.
If it was about your family, it wasn't me.
You're not supposed to sign your name.
If it's about you.
Things like that.
All right. So I love Chadwick Boseman. Are you on the Chadwick Boseman train?
I've been on the Chadwick Boseman train since he played Jackie Robinson. And first time I interviewed him was at Wrigley Field. Hey, I don't know if you know, it's snowing for opening day today.
I bet it's great.
Nobody's talked about that at all today.
I bet it's great. I bet it's going to be a lot of fun.
I talked to him then, and I've interviewed him. I think with just about every movie since then. But I thought he was really funny on SNL. I loved the sketch that they did, Black Jeopardy.
Yeah, he killed it.
Where all the titles were kind of street slang. And the two other contestants on the playing Jeopardy were, giving very street answers. And then it came to Chadwick Boseman, who was playing T'Challa, his character from Black Panther. And this is what happened.
Let's go to Ahelna for 800.
Okay. The policeman says there's been some robberies in your neighborhood and asks if you have any information.
What is? Not only do I tell this man what I know, but I also assist him in tracking down the offender. After all, our ministers of law enforcement are only here to protect us. Is this correct?
He was very funny, but
tremendous.
Just the whole sketch was very, very funny.
All right, a couple other things. Chance the Rapper doing his commencement address where?
He's going to be doing the commencement address at Dillard University. They say that they've been trying to get him there for a couple of years because he's one of the few young music personalities, part of a new wave of personalities who can talk about faith. While also being in hip-hop, they call him the artist your grandmother would love.
And he's a good kid. He really is a good kid. At least that's been my experience. I know, Dean, you've never liked him. No, it's kidding. Kidding, of course. Lin-Manuel Miranda, last year.
Has shingles.
I got to say, I did not see that coming.
Yeah,
funny.
He's got shingles.
Very funny.
He's currently quarantined from his children.
Yeah, sure.
Shingles, of course, is extremely painful. I've never had it, but I know people who have had it.
My dad had it. Dave's had it.
All they ever say is, oh, my gosh, it's so painful.
Yep.
Extremely contagious. So he's got that. On the other hand, Hamilton, recently opened in the UK, and last night won 7 awards at the Olivier Awards, which is the British equivalent of the Tonys, was nominated for 13. So just like it's been doing here in the U.S., Hamilton also dominating the theater scene in the West End.
Will Lin-Manuel Miranda do a new musical called Shingles?
It would be so great.
You don't want to be in the room where that happens.
It's so painful. It's so painful. Sorry if you're going through it.
That causes chicken pox.
Right.
Chicken.
It's inside all of us.
Oh, God.
What are you shaking out about?
Well, it's not contagious. It's not really contagious.
What do you mean? Of course it is.
No, it's not.
Oh, absolutely.
Shingles, you have to have had chicken pox.
Well, but if you have the shingles.
Oh, I guess
and,
maybe.
Yeah, and you're within 100 miles of someone, they'll get it. You can look it up.
100 miles?
You can look it up. Okay. Thanks, buddy.
Don't we all have the virus?
We all have it inside us.
Laying dormant.
Right.
It's laying dormant in us. It's laying dormant.
That was one of the most emotional songs, Dormant. Dormant. Remember when Dormant? That's a Tony winner. See ya.
Bye.
Matt Steen Richards back with you in the headlines next on 720. Oh, and by the way, that was sponsored by brand new Smile Implant Center, .com.
Yes, it will. Captain America captures Augusta. As the Imagine Dragons would say, welcome to the new age, to the new age.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
For those of you wondering why Nick Faldo is referencing a lyric from this song,
Imagine Dragons.
It's because it's the Psych Myself Up song that Patrick Reed played in his head when he was hitting balls on the range. As far as the nickname Captain America, that allegedly comes from the Ryder Cup, but we don't know that he's not dressing up like that on the weekend. It's none of our business. You know, well, when he's not playing.
It probably came from the Lil Wayne tweet calling him Patrick America.
Ryan Dempster used
Captain
to,
America goes back to the Ryder Cup, Dave.
Ryan Dempster used to dress up as Captain America.
So did Ryan Burrow. Yeah, they all do.
Nick quoting that song sounded like he doesn't know what he's talking about, and that song is old, you know, but he's like acting like it's a brand new, like Imagine Dragons.
He brought it up twice.
Brand new to him, baby.
And he said, and he listens to it in his earphones. I'm like, nobody calls him earphones.
In his Walkman.
Yeah. Sweet. Actually, ahead of our Masters discussion, you were just telling me something off the air about this terrible Canadian bus crash where these hockey players were killed. And a pretty remarkable story that just broke, right?
Yeah, the Ministry of Justice in Saskatchewan says one of the deceased in the crash was misidentified. And these are both players on the team, the junior hockey players. The ministry says the body of Parker Tobin was mistaken for that of Xavier Labelle. Labelle, whose father had been widely quoted in interviews about discovering that his son had been killed. Labelle is injured but alive. Tobin is among those killed, and they had thought that he was living.
So do the families know this, or they just found out?
I imagine they just found this out. I mean, this was
I don't
just
understand how that can happen over the course of 3 days.
Well, I'm sure the families know now. I was telling Andrea off the air that because they had all just dyed their hair blonde for the playoffs, they had some confusion in the beginning because people were misidentified.
And some of them had very traumatic injuries as well.
Yeah, like hard to identify in the blonde hair, and it was a little bit confusing.
And do we still don't know why this crash happened?
They're still investigating. This is just a horrible.
It's an intersection. I mean,
the guy fell asleep.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. But they've said that it wasn't alcohol, a mountainous or road or anything. It was a fairly straight road and
it's an intersection,
The semi. Got T-boned by the semi.
Well, but they hit the front of the bus. It wasn't like a full T-bone. And if you see the pictures, it's like...
It's awful.
Terrible.
The whole bus is,
It was a very moving picture that Andrea showed me this morning of three of the guys in the hospital locking arms to show their solidarity with each other, three of the survivors.
They wheeled, at the request of one of the teammates, they had wheeled two of the beds into the other teammates' room. So the three of them, like you said, are holding hands, and it says, you know, team strong.
At 8:45, we'll get a preview of what's coming up at 9 in just a second. But the Masters over the weekend, Patrick Reed, your winner. Jordan Spieth made an incredible rally, but a little too late, and bogeyed 18 to fall 2 back And Ricky Fowler finished one back after a birdie on 18. He had a great Sunday as well. But the Masters, even if you don't like golf, man, that is entertaining TV year after year after year. You can pretty much count on turning your television on 2 hours before it ends, and you're going to be entertained.
And even though Tiger Woods was not in contention yesterday,
right,
everybody said they got to have Tiger.
Nope.
I'm sure the ratings will be through the roof for the final round. It was great drama.
It was tremendous. Yeah, the other majors don't live up, but it's pretty crazy how every year it comes down to that.
And plus, Tony Finau needs a mention.
Tony Finau, who dislocated his ankle and reset it himself, because who wouldn't? And then had it taped up the next day, played the Masters. And what, he finished seventh? He had a great tournament.
And
he ran off six straight birdies yesterday.
Yeah, it was incredible.
And
yeah.
Can I just say,
with
for
the
someone,
popped up ankle?
Yeah, because you don't like golf, Annabelle.
No, and I was really watching the whole end of it, because you know why? Because the golfers now are much better looking and hotter than they used to be. Their outfits are awesome. They're tight.
Hey,
they're wearing
Mary,
the tight pants.
Mary, my eyes are up here.
I mean,
the tight pants.
Look
no,
at
I
Ricky
do.
Fowler.
I know,
oh
I know.
My, the
Jordan's
tangerine
pants felt really well too. I liked that like grayish color.
It's good the way you two are a fan of the tailoring.
Yeah,
Finau finished 7 under.
I actually had a problem with Tiger. He was wearing a black sweater vest that was keeping the Nike white fuzz was on it, and I'm like, Nike's got to get on it, because
no,
Jordan was wearing an Under Armour black jacket that didn't hold any fuzz from the towel. So
there was a wardrobe controversy prior to the start of the event. Tiger has a tradition where he wears Sunday red,
right?
And you know, guys don't want to clash. You know how
of
we
course
feel if someone else
now
shows up in our outfit.
You and Dave plan out your wardrobe.
So Patrick Reed was going to wear Sunday red as well, and Nike said, "No, you're not."
Yeah.
And they gave him a pink shirt. And honestly, for a chubby guy, because he's got a couple extra pounds, not a great look.
No. His Pat thinks it looks like my husband that Patrick Reed just buys a 3-pack at Golfsmith. Those shirts don't even look like they're
they have wardrobe. Sandberg, you know this. You've been behind the ropes,
mm-hmm,
or inside the ropes, I should say. Their clothes are chosen for them.
Oh yeah, and it's tagged. You're wearing this on Thursday,
right,
this on Friday.
Right.
And
what,
some of them need man's ears.
What's weird though? So what are the what?
They have to do some push-ups, I think.
They
tighten
need
up
man's
the
ears
chest area.
Oh yeah. Oh god, yeah, right.
Yeah.
What's weird to me is though that they tell you. I know they are selected ahead of time what they're wearing specifically, but that they say, you know, like they said to him, you can't wear this color.
Right. Which I'm surprised, because he wears red in honor of Tiger,
right,
because that's how he grew up watching him. But, you know, I guess Nike's in charge,
mm-hmm,
if they're paying your bills.
I have Kohl's do the same thing,
yeah,
for me.
Right.
All right. So the picks, when we come back, how we did in our Masters pool.
Obviously, you're not a golfer.
Our friend
Spike
Back to
Odell. The Steve Cochran Show.
Excuse me,
on 720 WGN.
Someone's talking. Our friend Spike Odell texted me a list of Masters broadcast rules. This is actually from 1979, but for those of you who are wondering why Gary McCord is not on the Masters broadcast, if you follow golf on CBS, it's because he once referred to the greens as being so slick, they're going to need body bags to take the players out of there.
Oh.
Something
fantastic.
Close to that. It was a body bag comment.
Not cool.
And then he called the gallery hooligans at some point. They said they were as loud as hooligans. I think it was hooligans, but it was a word the Masters folks don't agree with. So here's some of the rules. Now, this is 1979, but most of these still apply. Never refer to the gallery or patrons as a mob or a crowd. They are only patrons. Mm-hmm. Never estimate the size of the gallery. I don't know why that matters. Never refer to players' earnings. Now, I've not noticed that, but what do they consider too gauche to talk about how much people are making? Never refer to Masters prize money. Now, they did a couple of times this weekend. That rule apparently has lapsed, because they did talk about the size of the purse. De-emphasize the players' antics. Doesn't that sound like a Hootie Johnson kind of comment? Now, Clifford Roberts, the guy that started Augusta National with Bobby Jones, was still alive in 1979. But I don't know what the antics would be. Fist pumps?
Maybe like Jon Rahm, he banged his driver over his
oh,
leg.
Oh, he's getting fined for that.
And
I guarantee he's getting
fined. Well, maybe he's
that.
Getting fined, but all they said is he's not happy with that. Like,
that's a good point.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's
a good point.
They don't really tell you.
Can
yeah.
they show that, too? Because wasn't
they
there,
showed it because it was right after he...
Wasn't there a time where Tiger pitched his clubs, he threw a couple of his clubs in the water, and then they immediately cut, and I had heard
well, I'm sure
maybe
they,
from
yeah,
Edit
they,
that
sure.
you can't show if a player's having a meltdown.
The water in front of the 13th is not to be called Ray's Creek, but a tributary of Ray's Creek. That obviously is lapsed. They call it Ray's Creek. Do not compare any holes at Augusta National with any other golf course. What we give you? This number 12 at Augusta, way better than all the other sucky holes on all the other courses.
It's like 10 on White Pines.
Make no reference to Masters tickets having been sold out. Why?
Why?
No idea. Make frequent mention of the presentation ceremony to be conducted at the end of the final round. That's always that really smooth thing where whoever's in charge of the club presents the green jacket and an awkward passing of the jacket to the winner.
When Sergio put the jacket on Patrick Reed, there was white fuzz on the back of it, like a white piece of lint, and it was so big. And I'm like, who?
Well, what people don't know is, obviously you don't know who's going to win the tournament in most cases until it's over. So you find there's a list at the clubhouse of guys who are members, because all the members have green jackets, and they hold those jackets, stay in their lockers, and there's a list of the sizes. So if you're a 42 regular, they know which members are a 42 regular, and then the attendant has to run and take it out of member Bob's locker and bring it over to put it on Patrick.
Who's the chairman, Fred Ridley or whatever? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think he used a little too much hairspray in his hair too.
Too much product?
Yep.
Oh, he had that Pompidou thing.
Yeah, see?
Yeah.
This is, again, broadcast rules of the Masters. Do not guess where a ball might be.
Why? So weird.
Don't estimate the length of a putt. Obviously, that's over because they do it all the time. Yeah, they got a laser mentioning of the distance. But this is, tell you, 1979. Instead of identifying Lee Elder as the first black man to play in the Masters, say he's the first person of his race to play in the tournament.
Come on. Really?
Wow. Yeah. Times are changing. All right. So we made our picks. Here's what happened. Everybody on the show picks three players. Total score for the weekend is who wins. And if you pick players that missed the cut, the score doubles. Let's go worst to first.
Worst to first. So there's six of us. I did not email any picks in. So I did tell Super Joe and Andre on Friday that I liked Patrick Reed. But
she did say that.
Tough break for you.
Steve Grzanich. picked Jack Nicklaus. Nicklaus.
No, it was Patrick Reed, I thought.
You picked Jack Nicklaus.
Okay. Good call by you. St. Nicholas.
The score, said, was par 33.
Yeah.
That was the score.
It was close.
Steve is in sixth place. Uh-huh. Super Joe in fifth place. Unfortunately, one of his guys didn't make the cut. Norin.
Alex Norin. Yeah, why'd you pick Alex Norin? Were you just being a wise guy?
No, I don't know anything about golf.
So you just picked him off the list?
Yeah, I picked two favorites and one not favorite.
I originally told him to go with Gene Sarazen and Ben Hogan. Anyway, wait, one of those guys is dead.
Andrea is in fourth place.
Bummer. I know. I picked Phil. Oh, no, I picked Tiger, Spieth, and Poulter. Justin Rose. Oh, yeah, Poulter.
Tiger, and Rose.
Third?
Steve Cochran.
Who did I pick? I don't remember.
You have Tiger, Phil, and Rory.
Oh, good
Tiger
call,
beat,
Steve.
Tiger beat Phil by one stroke.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so do you want first or second place?
Second.
Well, but then we don't get to crown the champion.
Yeah, we do.
Second place, Dave Ennett.
Oh! So close.
I had it nailed till Rory just went.
Bubba, Rory, and Justin Thomas.
And Justin Thomas also playing when.
Justin Thomas wearing bogey, those
bogey,
yellow
bogey,
pants.
Bogey.
And he had to hit a ball out of the mud and it splashed on those yellow pants.
I love those pants.
Yeah, but they had mud on them.
What's with you three? You three in the pants.
So here is number one.
I think we're out of time. We don't have time to crown the winner.
Our golf lover that was glued to the TV yesterday.
Yes.
Mary Vandeveld.
Wow.
And she won by
this
a lot,
This is like when they grab a chicken to pick stocks against the stock analysts on Wall Street.
It's the monkey when they start pointing to the
Super Bowl pick.
Justin Rose, Jordan Spieth, and Ricky Fowler.
All in the top 15, I might add.
Yeah.
Mary, why'd you pick those three?
I did my research.
So we turned you into a golf fan?
I did.
Fan?
Yeah. Well, I don't... I can't watch it for 3 days,
What's the next
though?
Major?
4 days. It's 4 days.
It's too much. It's
What's the next major? Major? What's the next major coming up?
I don't know. Let's see. What's next?
The unofficial fifth major is the Players. That'll be next.
Followed by
the U.S. Open, the British Open, and the PGA.
Oh, I was close.
But we just say the Open.
The Open Championship.
It's an Open. Yeah.
And the women are playing a major here.
Yeah, they are, which is called what, Mary?
The U.S. Open for women.
Wow.
Not even close.
You relinquished that prize.
Congratulations, Mary Vandeveld, winner of our first majors contest of the season. 858 CLTV joins us next as we continue on 720 WGN.
Uh-oh. here comes the putter throw.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
No ego problem with these guys. This is the average white band. Can you name the two average white band hits? Their two biggest records. Cut the Cake. What's the other one? That's right. Pick Up the Pieces.
Pick Up the Pieces.
You've won nothing. Congratulations. I feel like outside, you're saying, Steve, what is today? Well, today's Monday. Today is also, at least locally, can you believe this weather day? And it's also Cherish an Antique Day. So this is probably a good time that we should say to Dave Ennett, we cherish him.
We do.
Okay, you know what? That's, first of all, it's so wrong. It's very and nice. I'm going to call Dr. Smith right now.
It's a compliment, I think.
Tell him you've already given up on the clean 20.
Paula Giuliano's here, Director of Sponsorship Marketing for the Randolph Street Market. An avid collector herself and an expert on antiques. If you look at Dave, what's he worth?
I'm not going there.
Thank you.
Right. Priceless.
Some people have respect here.
Priceless.
This is Cherish an Antique Day, right?
Yes, it is.
What does that mean to you? What are you guys doing?
Well, you know, we're celebrating our 15th year at the Randolph Street Market. And
top 10 in the country, I'm told.
It's one of the top 10 in the country of our kind. And we have, it's a festival in the West Loop. And it's just a terrific thing. We're probably one of the few festivals in Chicago that operate every single month, the whole 12 months of the year.
So when people go, what will they see?
Well, you will find a lot of antiques and collectibles and fancy foods. And
are there any experts to value stuff? If
absolutely.
I bring so if we bring our stuff by, we can go, hey, I've got this. How much is it worth?
Yes, we have auctioneers and we have evaluators. You'll find a lot of fun things there because we have furniture and jukeboxes, old pie cabinets, clocks, books, and
pretty much everything. Then, huh?
Pretty much everything.
I got an old Gumby. I wonder what the old Gumby's
are. There was my question to Paul. I was going to say, how many times a day does someone come up to you and say, "Hey, my grandma has this painting or this lamp or this Gumby"? Maybe in Steve's case.
Yes, a million times. Yeah. But we are the go-to resource for that kind of thing. So, you know, we see...
And people don't know, right? People don't know if they have something super valuable.
They don't know. They don't know. It's a trend now that people are inheriting antiques from their grandparents, and they want to merge it into their, you know, urban chic, modern look. And we're this resource to do it. So we help you.
What is more important as far as value of an item goes, age or condition?
Both. It's really important about both.
Okay.
Age makes it.
So it probably depends on the item, on which might make it more valuable?
Of course.
Okay.
But, you know, depends on the item, too, where we have resources to help refinish and rebuild something. And there's some things that you can't do that would ruin the antique value of it, but there's some things you can, so...
I was asking you off the air, Galena, still a great place to go for antiquing?
It's yes, it's one of probably many, many.
It's beneficial, obviously, to the person if they don't start messing with it, right? So if I have something I think might be an antique or something of value, don't try to refinish it or don't try to clean it up myself.
Upholster it.
Exactly. Like, bring it to you first,
exactly.
Right?
Bring it to the experts. And, you know, we have experts on... that frequent our market on a regular basis every month and let them evaluate it first to give you the right direction.
That's cool.
We go every year to the market. I love it. I mean, it's just great to browse and look around. And we've bought like a few pieces of art there. And just really cool stuff. But it's the collectible signs. I mean, old-time signs that you'd see hanging on the side of a barn somewhere.
Isn't this a whole way? I mean, Restoration Hardware started this way, right? And now you can go into Restoration Hardware and overpay but for everything.
Yeah.
But you can get a fair price for whatever your antique is when you go where your antique love is when you go in.
How valuable are old photographs? You know, the old black and white ones, even if it's just your family or a different family? Are those pretty valuable?
Again, I think it goes back to how old is it, and if you have glass plates, if you're really going back and you have like the glass plates for photographs, you know, all of that is taken into consideration in terms of evaluating.
The glass plates were from the era where the crazy guy would get under the black curtain and explosion would go off and exactly. Everybody looked the same. Everybody looked frightened and angry.
Exactly.
That's how we had our pictures of Santa taken.
Did you?
Yeah.
I'm not surprised.
Dave called that prom. But.
What about books? Are books valuable?
Yes. Books are always valuable, especially like first editions and that sort of thing.
Does an autograph from the author make it less valuable?
Does it make it less valuable? No. I mean, I think it depends on the book, the age, the condition. You know, we go back to that. So,
I remember when I was a kid, my grandmother's house. Remember my grandmother?
Remember
crazy grandmother?
She said, if the house is a-rockin'.
If the house is a-rockin', don't come knockin'. Mm-hmm. But I remember as a kid going into her attic. Now, she was born in 1902. So as a kid going into her attic, I remember looking through some books. This is pre-internet, kids.
Yeah.
She had books going back to the middle 19th century, 1850, you know, publisher dates, 1850, 1860. And I went, wow, these are dusty. And then I left.
Exactly.
Grabbed them.
Very valuable.
Dumb.
We have items that go back every decade for the past 100 years.
Yeah. Very cool.
Can baseball cards still be considered antiques? And
oh, yes,
little,
absolutely. That's also a big item.
Yeah. How many times have you heard the story, I had the best baseball cards, my mom sold them?
Yeah.
Every day of your life?
Every day. Every market. We always hear, you know, sad stories and happy stories. And, you know, we do our best to help be that resource for the people coming in that want the evaluation of their goods and or where to fix it or how to decorate. How do I merge my antiques in with my urban chic? Yeah. That seems to be the trend lately, especially with young people, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
Dave, what do you like? Do you like lamps? You like end tables? You like, what do you like when it comes to your
antiques? Well, I do like, they do have. Have very nice furniture. I mean, I like looking at it. It's you have to plan ahead if you want to take any of it home because it can be a little tough to move. But
but we can help you there because we have free furniture delivery during our summer program, which is May through September.
Okay, well that's good to know.
That's good to know. How about antique jewelry? I know a lot of you know people wear. Well, I have a couple of my grandma's rings and necklaces. I mean, that's still very popular right now.
We have a big selection of estate jewelry. And that's, you know, part of some of the categories that we offer at the Randolph Street Market. You know, because we started as the Chicago Antique Market back in 2003. And throughout the years, by sheer demand of the neighborhood people, they wanted more and more. They wanted collectibles and furniture and, you know, indie fashion and estate jewelry. And so we just grew by leaps and bounds. And then we rebranded the show to the Randolph Street Market Festival. And that's how we are today. So,
when do you open?
We are opening April 25th, 28th and 29th for our April show.
Okay.
One weekend each month. And then our season opener for May that starts the whole kickoff of the summer is May 26th and 27th.
And what are the standard hours?
10 to 5.
Okay.
And then we have an early morning buy on Saturday morning for those pickers and designers that want to get a little jump on the ahead of things, and that starts at 8.
Can you do anything by appointment if you have something of particular value?
By appointment, not really. No.
Okay, so show up between 10 and 5 with your item.
Exactly.
If it's something big, can you bring a photograph and then somehow figure it out from there?
You can, but I mean, I think an evaluator has to.
Yeah, you got
to
see the thing.
You got to see it.
Yeah, right. It makes sense. It's the Randolph Street Antique Market, located oddly enough on
Randolph Street.
Crazy. More information where? Facebook or the website?
Go to our website, and that's randolphstreetmarket.com, and you'll find everything you need. We're at 1341 West Randolph Street, and we rent out Plumbers Hall, and we have all of the grounds.
How about that?
In the summer. So.
Perfect.
Yeah, they have live music, right?
Yes.
Live music. There's lots of food. So it's really a fun thing
to
do. The
bands play old instruments.
I guess they do. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, yeah.
We have all the festival fun that you want in a buyer's market.
But the food's new.
The food is new.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank
fresh
God.
Food.
Yes.
It's great to see somebody that's doing something they love, and that's clearly what you do. So congratulations on that.
Okay, thank you.
Our website one more time?
RandolphStreetMarket.com.
Nice job by you. 921. We continue on CL TV and 720 WGN. Does your mom collect antiques?
She does. My mom does, and her friends. They go antiquing every now and again. Mm-hmm. They sometimes sit there used to be this little antique mall in Kankakee that they would go down and hit. So
we're going to give it to Randolph.
They'll be at this
one. Let's go.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
I was speculating on what today is before we talked about National Antique Cherish Your Antique Day. Texter from the 630 texted, "What's today? It's my birthday." So I don't know the person's name. So happy birthday to everybody in the 630 area code that has a birthday today.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thousands of people. How many of you have an Alexa in your house? An Echo, if you will.
I have two.
Yeah, so do I. It's a great story in one of the tech pieces that I read, because I read everything. I have to. It's the gig. And it's the weirdest things you can have your Alexa do. Now, don't get too freaky on me, okay? How about flush your toilet?
Can Alexa do that?
Yeah. Now, you're going to need a $6,000 toilet that's Alexa ready. But it's a Wi-Fi equipped toilet. So, let's say you leave the house and you go, "Well, I don't even know if I flush the toilet." You're worried about locking the doors? You can actually flush your toilet remotely. Alexa, aww, flush!
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
You mean brush?
Now, here's one that I think is a real-world problem. How many times, Andrea, have you left the house and wondered, did I turn off this? Did I turn off that? Did I leave my white-hot hair straightener sitting out?
Or close your garage.
I have thought of that, yes.
What did you say, Madam?
Close your garage. I always, whenever I drive away, I go, did I close the garage?
I'm not sure I can help you with that yet with the Alexa, but I know this.
There are things, with the light switches.
You got appliances in your bathroom, and they're plugged into a smart plug called a Wemo smart plug.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I have a Wemo.
Yep.
I have one of those.
Coordinates with your Alexa. You can set that up today.
I didn't know it coordinated with Alexa.
Yeah. If you go to the Alexa app, And you click on the compatible apps in the Alexa app on their menu side, you could coordinate with a Wemo.
Oh, see, that's I need to do that. I need to get an Alexa.
Or you could just unplug your stuff before you leave.
That's a thought. That is a thought.
But there's something about, you know, leaving the front room and going up to the bedroom and just doing it right from your phone, or having Alexa do it, as opposed to having to walk the 10 steps and shut the light off.
Now, the guys and ladies that write the code, the computer code for Alexa, they get a little bored. It's ones and zeros all day. So they put a lot of secret things in, one of which I'm going to reveal to you now. You could tell Alexa to open the box of cats. Open the box of cats. And it will play a ridiculously annoying meow.
Oh.
And you can do it anytime all day. You could annoy your roommates, anybody else. Alexa, open the box of cats.
Okay, that's funny.
Actually, I probably just set someone off at their house.
Yes.
Say it.
Alexa, open the box of cats if your house is meowing right now.
We have one in the newsroom.
Yeah, newsrooms.
Say it again.
Probably.
Yeah.
Getting it.
And yeah, I don't know if it's close enough to the microphone. Steve must have had to go to Starbucks.
Yeah.
Let's see. What else do we have here? Cook your food for you.
No way.
Yeah, Alexa can help with recipes and measurements, but if you have the right tools, it can do the cooking. The Chef Steps is a cooking device that you can put into water with your food, and it heats and cooks it for you. The Wi-Fi-enabled gadget is also Alexa convertible, meaning you can sync it and keep track of how it's doing through Alexa.
Oh, my gosh. So can you use it, say, if you have the if you have the stuff in the crock pot?
Yeah, I think you put the actual device in whatever you're cooking. I don't think it would work in a pressure cooker because you'd probably ruin the device.
Or your home.
But, you know, you get an open pot of whatever. I think you could do it. I don't know what the application here would be, though, because if I'm making, say, one of my specialties, like macaroni and cheese, I'm waiting for the water to boil, and then I'm putting the pasta in, and then later adding the powdered cheese. I don't know how Alexa can help me.
I make baked potatoes a lot, and I cook them at 450 for like an hour and 10 minutes because I like the skin to get really crispy.
450?
Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, I'm a potato artist, Mary. Once you have one of my baked potatoes, you'll never want another baked potato.
I love the crusty skin.
So that's how you get it. Anyway,
that was a weirdest conversation.
I would love if while I was at yoga, I could tell Alexa, start cooking the baked potatoes, because sometimes like on Mondays and Wednesdays, I go to later yoga and I don't get home till 7:30. And then I have to wait till like 8:30 for these potatoes.
So this would be helpful to you.
Yeah. I would like to say, Alexa, start cooking the potatoes at 6:30.
This is such a first world problem.
I knew it would help. Andy's in Northbrook.
Hi. My Alexa's going crazy. Just don't buy anything, okay?
Andy, you're the best. Thank you. Apparently, we set the cats off at Andy's
house.
Order
a pizza for Andy.
Yeah, give Andy something. Yeah, as a matter of fact, give Andy a pizza. Give Andy a Lou Malnati's pizza from loumalnati's.com.
You know, you can also ask Alexa to tell you a joke.
Mm-hmm.
There are built-in jokes.
Yeah.
Dave and my...
Is that how you have a good time?
Hang
around the house.
I'm bored.
Remember
Dave and my 11-year-old stepson doing the same thing with Alexa.
I didn't say I'm doing it. I was just pointing out the information.
Remember Dave got in some trouble with Siri. Don't you remember that? Where he asked her what she was wearing?
Right. We were in a meeting.
I didn't ask her.
Come on now.
No. He asked Siri, what am I wearing?
Oh,
yes.
Right.
Yes.
Which just makes it so much better.
We were trying to talk about how funny it would be if you had a phone fling with Siri, and Dave held up his phone and said, Siri, what am I wearing? And I went, Dave, look down. I'm not sure. It can't be.
I don't think that was even the topic.
It can't be that hard to figure out.
It's so wrong.
And a Portuguese company has fixed the most annoying thing about flip-flops. I've talked about this before. I cannot wear flip-flops.
Why?
Why?
Because they don't stay on my feet. Yes. They fly off my feet. As a matter of fact, I killed two people in Cancun 3 years ago. My feet have been registered as deadly weapons because I can't keep the flip-flops on my
feet. My husband can't wear them either.
And I believe it's because I have a measurable toe gap issue between my big toe and the next toe.
Could be. What about the closed toe kind? I mean, that have the loop around the toes.
The mandals.
Do you know these Portuguese people? The thing. A Portuguese company has invented... the iguanae, I-G-U-A-N-E-Y-E. They're jungle shoes that wrap around your big toe and your heel. They look like slippers. They feel like flip-flops. You can wear them anywhere.
There you go.
What are they called?
Your big toe and
iguanae.
Your heel.
The iguanae. Yeah, because your big toe sticks out farther than anything else.
Oh, okay.
So aren't they like those stretchable things that women put on to try shoes on?
I was going to say, they look like women's shoes.
Shoes are available in two sizes, Jungle Light and Jungle Luxe.
So those thing you're talking about that we use to try on shoes are called a ped?
Yeah, the peds. That's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
That's picture a ped.
A ped with a rubber bottom.
Picture a ped that's durable that you could wear in the rainforest.
For those of you that cannot wear flip-flops.
I'm telling you. Most dangerous item. The most dangerous item anywhere.
Again, my stepson, Patrick, he runs out of flip-flops. Like, if he starts running, the flip-flops stay behind and his feet keep going. Like...
Listen, all of
maybe
you
it's the toe gap issue.
As a little kid, all of you probably enjoyed that sound, fa-flap, 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 you know, when you're walking around with your flip-flops. I could never do that.
Oh.
I was deprived because flip-flops wouldn't stay on my feet.
So I walk gently, heel toe, so I don't make that noise, but my husband does not, and he wears a size 13 shoe, and the flip-flop noise is maddening.
It must make you crazy.
It does,
But at least he can wear flip-flops.
Yeah, they stand.
Can you imagine being married to a man that couldn't wear flip-flops?
No.
Why don't you ask Alexa to order you a pair of iguanae?
Alexa, open the box of cats.
Andy says, thank you.
Back with the headlines next on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
It's 9:46, Bill and Wendy at 10. If you ever looked at Senator Ted Cruz from Texas and went, ooh, creepy, you're not the only one. A neurologist has written a piece discussing why Ted Cruz is so hard to look at. If we have time, we're going to get to this before 10. A terrible story over the weekend. As the nightmare for the people in Syria continues. Early on in the program this morning, I spoke with Michael O'Hanlon. He's from the Brookings Institution, talking about this. He's an expert not just on the region, but on the military in particular, how we react or may react to it. And I asked him, what do we know about this attack? And is this more serious than the other chemical attacks that we've seen?
What we know is not from any direct American on-the-ground monitoring, because we don't have American personnel in that part of Syria. As you know, our special forces and intelligence folks are more out east and maybe in some other places, but not that close to Damascus, as far as I understand things. So what we're seeing is reports from hospitals of people coming in with breathing problems or signs of chemical attack or dead, you know, in some cases, from such symptoms. And so that's pretty compelling, especially when you know that by some estimates there have been up to 300 chemical attacks previously in this war. And so it's hard to believe that President Assad shows any respect for any red lines.
Does he do Assad do these on his own, or does he clear everything with Russia?
I think Russia could stop him. I don't know if he goes out and asks Russia for permission. But I think we know from Vladimir Putin's history and from the way the Russians handled insurgencies on their own territories, especially in Chechnya, that they believe in a pretty, you know, brass knuckles approach to fighting insurgency. In other words, punish the population that might have some sympathy or might harbor any suspected insurgents. And that's essentially what Assad does. And we know that Russia essentially endorses that. And Russian aircraft have at times, probably not with chemical weapons, but been involved in, you know, these kinds of attacks against civilian neighborhoods. At some point, it doesn't even matter that much whether it's a chemical attack or traditional ordnance. If it's being used against an apartment building or a market or something like that, then the intent is to kill civilians. And Russia's certainly been part of that.
Michael, Russia's blaming Israel for the strikes on the Syrian airbase. I'm curious, Israel's response, and at this point, should the United States intervene?
Well, I think Israel knows what it's doing, and Israel has decided that it's got to intensify its role, partly because our role has been so ineffective over 7 years, and we haven't managed to prevent Iran and Hezbollah from entrenching themselves in western Syria, very close to Israel, and very close to Lebanon, where, of course, Hezbollah is based. So, for those reasons, Israel feels it has to not just prevent specific attacks against Israel, but also prevent arms shipments coming through that part of the territory headed to Lebanon, and also prevent Iran and Hezbollah from setting up any kind of large bases with stockpiles of weaponry that could, over time, be sent to Hezbollah. I doubt very much that Israel can succeed in this comprehensively because, you know, there's just too much Iranian presence in that part of Syria. But I think Israel sending a message that if we see something big, we're going to act. And I think the United States has to essentially tolerate that. We need a much more comprehensive strategy ourselves rather than just saying that because ISIS is temporarily partially defeated that we're going to come home. I think that's a big mistake.
Do you anticipate us doing anything on our own this week?
I wouldn't be surprised, although it raises the question to what end beyond just taking away a little bit more of President Assad's air force. We took about almost a fifth of it out of action last year after that chemical attack, and those were in the early months of the Trump presidency. I supported that raid partly because, you know, red lines have to mean something.
Right.
But the enforcement didn't really do anything to change the dynamics of the war, and it didn't even prevent these subsequent chemical attacks. So I wouldn't be surprised if we take out 10% more of the Syrian Air Force, but you have to ask, what's the end game? And I think the end game here has to be a broader strategy than President Trump seems willing to consider so far. We're going to have to stay in this thing with a small U.S. presence for the long haul, because otherwise you're giving up the parts of the country that are currently occupied by our allies, and ultimately there's only a couple of potential actors who could replace them, Assad, Hezbollah, or ISIS 2.0, and I don't think we want any of those things to happen.
What is the upside for the Assad side to rile up the United States in this?
Well, I don't think Assad's deliberately trying to provoke us, although he's certainly having that effect. And I'm glad that you're highlighting this on your show, and I think all Americans should be thinking about it. But Assad has pretty much taken our measure and decided we don't want to get more involved. And he also wants to win the war. You know, the place where these atrocities happened is right next to the main city center of Damascus, his capital city. And he thinks there are still a number of insurgents there, and he's right about that. And he thinks that the way to defeat them is to annihilate the neighborhoods in which they live. And, of course, he's brutally and tragically wrong about that, and he's a monster for the way he's fighting this war. But he's figured out that neither President Obama nor President Trump wanted to do much, really, in the end, to stop him. Now, President Trump still has the chance to reconsider. I don't believe that it's realistic to overthrow Assad militarily. I don't think any American wants to get into another big war in the Middle East. But there are a number of things we can do in the country's more remote regions to protect our allies, to help them stabilize their own sectors where they control things, to begin to reconstruct and let refugees come home. And then over time, we got to figure out a way to coax Assad out of power. But it's going to take a while.
Full podcast up on that segment and all the key segments of the show and the entire show, wherever you pull your podcast daily. And by the way, stretch before you pull your podcast. It's at WGNRadio.com, at Cochran Show on Twitter, Steve Cochran Show on Facebook. And thanks for your support. 9:51, we continue on CLTV. And we'll come back in just a few moments with why Ted Cruz is so creepy to look at.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Why is Ted Cruz's face so creepy?
Why, Steve?
George Washington. George Washington University professor Richard Sidowick decided to take it on. He's a neurologist and examined thousands of pictures of Ted Cruz, trying to come up with what was it about Ted Cruz's face that was so creepy. Craig Mazin, who's a screenwriter, was Ted Cruz's roommate at Princeton. He called him a huge a-hole, said he's creepy. Mm-hmm. He said, when people found out I was his roommate, I used to get emails for not smothering him in his sleep back in the 80s. The Germans have a word for Cruz. It's backpfeifensicht. Backpfeifensicht, pardon my terrible German. The expression means face in need of a good punch.
Oh, no.
Why is Ted Cruz's face so creepy? Apparently, according to this neurologist, it comes down to the smile and his inability to smile like a normal human being. He says, I have rarely, if ever, seen a conventional smile from Senator Cruz. In a natural smile, the corners of the mouth go up. These muscles, we go, look at the TV cameras and smile, both of you.
Okay.
And the corners of your mouth go up, yes. Right? And Ted Cruz's face, he looks confused and angry.
Like he's hiding something, maybe?
No matter the emotional coloring of Senator Cruz's outward rhetoric, his mouth typically tightens into the same straight line. If it deviates from this, the corner of his mouth bend down, not upwards. That's why Ted Cruz is so creepy, according to a neurologist. And now you can get on with your day.
Listen, learn, laugh. 720 WGN.
Yeah. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Steve.
How are you today?
Fabulous.
Even with this crappy weather outside?
Yeah, the weather doesn't affect me. Does it affect you?
Yes, I have SAD, sad.
The seasonal?
No, I have snowy affective disorder.
Oh, I didn't know that existed.
Snowy April disorder.
I have snowy angry disorder. It gets me angry when it snows in April.
Why don't we do a telethon for that?
That would be good.
We should have a telethon.
Or a GoFundMe.
I've got one
scheduled first, though, for men with flat butts.
Oh, you got to do something about that right now. Yes. That needs to
raise
be
money for
eradicated.
Did you have a nice weekend?
I'm with you. Yes.
Good. Here's Bill, and is Wendy coming in today?
This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago. If you have a smart speaker, just say, is Wendy coming in today on TuneIn? This news report is sponsored by HealthfulHome.com. Here's Steve Bertrand.